Pushkin. Hello, everyone. Here's this week's Tangent, exclusively for Pushkin Plus listeners. As you know, tangents are where we get to use the material left wrongly on the cutting room floor, the material that didn't make it into the episode. And today, we have a special treat, an interview that I never had the chance to use this season. It's with the economist Ian Ayers, who's also a professor at Yale Law School. We started off talking about magic wand experiments, but soon turned to the topic of deterrence. What actually works to stop people from drinking and driving? Thank you for joining me. And I wanted to hear your magic wand.
Sure. So one is that we should have judges randomly sentence people to different lengths for the same crime. And no less than Justice O'Connor in the case of Ohio adult parole authority versus Woodward suggested that that kind of a magic wand experiment would be unconstitutional. It would violate people's due process rights. And she said that, and I quote her, it would be a meaningless ritual. Other judges would describe this as arbitrary and capricious, and they're only half right. It's arbitrary, but an experiment that has a purpose of learning what works is not capricious. You're doing it with a good heart to try to find out what sentence lengths do the best job of bringing about general deterrence and specific deterrence. Do we really need to sentence people to a 5-year or a 5-month jail sentence? Maybe we could get away with less. Maybe we need more. And after hundreds of years, we really don't have good information on what sentences serve our purposes the best.
So you're telling me that somebody commits an armed robbery and no one can tell me definitively whether that person is less likely to commit a second violent crime if he is sentenced to 1 year in prison as opposed to 2 years in prison.
That's right. And the thing that we really don't know about is what is the impact of a more severe sentence on other people? If a jurisdiction starts having heavier sentences, what is the general deterrence effect? And that's something that we could, for the first time, learn about by doing some random assignments of jurisdictions to higher or lower sentencing amounts. How your sentencing is going to impact my propensity to commit a crime is something we know very little about. And just to, you said in passing, you might be more likely to commit with a 5-year than a 10-year sentence. Not necessarily true. There's some evidence that prison hardens you and is a training school, and that you're more likely to commit after a 10-year sentence than a 5-year sentence.
But to your point, you're telling me a couple thousand years in, we actually don't have a specific definitive answer to the question of whether a longer sentence is better than a shorter sentence?
That's true. That is true.
So wait, describe to me the magic wand. I've given you the magic
wand.
I want you to give me the best possible experiment for answering questions about the utility of various sentence lengths, regardless of any other constraints. So we're throwing every constraint out the window.
Yeah.
Ian gets to do what Ian wants to do. What does Ian want to do?
Sure. I would randomize at either the metropolitan area or maybe at the state area. And I would try with the status quo sentencing or put the guidelines up 20% or down 20%.
So I'm going to randomize all 50 states. Let's say states for the sake of simplicity. And I'm going to pick, how many crimes do you want to pick?
You know, if I'm, you're making me think in ways, I might even go to DUIs as the first thing to start on. There are a lot of DUIs out there. And I think that there's more progress that could be made on just thinking about what works best on DUIs.
Wait, let's run with DUIs.
Okay.
So under one condition, let's standardize 0.08, because I can imagine, by the way, we could do an experiment where we vary that.
Yes.
Let's, for the moment, let's standardize 0.08. And let's say that if you are convicted of driving under the influence with a blood alcohol level greater than 0.08, we will randomize you to one of five conditions. And those five conditions are no jail time. What? You tell me.
Well, I'd say the no jail time, but mandatory training. So that okay. I definitely put that in as one of these things. Losing your license would be in the mix, but I definitely would throw in jail time.
Well, you know what I'm thinking about? You know how in the really fancy Tesla, they have what they call ludicrous mode, which allows your car to accelerate at some preposterous, 2 seconds to 0 to 60. We could have a ludicrous mode condition where a DUI is like 10 years in prison without possibility of parole. Remember, this is a magic wand. It would be, would it not, really interesting to know if we found out that going ludicrous on drunken drivers put drunken drivers, put it to zero? That would be a really interesting thing to learn.
Yes. And, Stephen King has a short story called Quitters Incorporated, where people sign up basically with the mafia to quit smoking. And the consequences are escalating to ludicrous mode, with the penultimate one, which include having digits of your hand cut off if they catch you smoking. And it does include they ultimately killing you. Kind of sitting there in this story is that it's possible that this extreme thing could save lives, even if it predictably is going to kill 0.5% of the people that are subject to it. Even if 0.5% in your thing have to stay in jail for the rest of their lives, we could actually see a life-saving effect from something very dire.
Yeah. Now, why can't I, to play devil's advocate for a moment, stick with DUIs. Yeah. I already have a range of jurisdictions around the world with very different both standards for what drunken driving is and also penalties, right? So I can't construct the equivalent of a magic wand just from the available
evidence.
Well,
we're getting better at it, and there are fancy regressions. And I'm such a fan of Josh Angrist, who just won a Nobel Prize for ways of tricking observational data into emulating randomized experiments. And indeed, one of the great recent contributions has been applied now to drunken driving. So it turns out that most states have two cutoffs for drunken driving. They have the 0.07 or 0.08, and then they throw the book at you at 0.15 if you're really blotto. And one of the great things that we can do is we can just look at the people that are caught on the breathalyzer at 0.14 or 0.16. And it's as if between those two groups of people, it's at random whether they caught you above or below. And so we can find out whether throwing the book at people, these additional fines, whether they help reduce recidivism. That's something that we can do.
Do they?
Not very much, no. And that's, again, only specific deterrence. We still don't know whether they help on general deterrence.
But once again, we're struck with this thing that, like, we're still largely in the dark about what the most effective anti-drunk driving set of policies might be. Like, there's a cluster of things we're talking about here: level of enforcement, supportive mental health and other addiction programs, and then a whole range of penalties, everything from jail time to taking away your license to what have you. And then the question of what the level should be. All of these things in 2022 are still up for grabs.
Yeah.
That's embarrassing. Isn't it embarrassing?
Well, yes. And with regard to some of these, we don't have the magic wand constraints as that we do with regard to, let's say, sentencing, that again, serious people will think that that is just immoral to randomize to similar people to different jail sentences. But we could do it on these other grounds right away. And there's just resistance.
Yeah, yeah. Last set of questions. Why is the criminal justice world so reluctant to experiment? So when Justice O'Connor says this would be a rave, what particular ideology is she expressing in that moment?
Yeah, I think that a lot of the criminal justice system is somewhat understandably thrust into the ex post position. A crime has occurred. We have a particular defendant, an accused, in front of us. We have a particular victim. And we're so focused on what is doing justice by these people in front of us and that we just don't have enough concern or attention about the people that aren't in front of us, that are the potential offenders, the potential survivors. So I think that if you're not focused on the future crime, it makes it easier to just say, no, we can't flip coins over clemency.
Yeah. So one is, yes, that they don't see themselves as in the prevention business. They see themselves in the disposing of a criminal case business. But the larger thing is, they seem to have precious little faith in the ability of interventions and laws to change behavior.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. But the point is, once again, we're in 2022 and we don't know if there's a fundamental difference in risk aversion between general and criminal populations.
We don't know, and we can't do the experiment.
Yeah. Not just can't, we're uninterested. It's worse than can't.
Right. As a society, we're uninterested. There is a few of us that have this interest.
Yes. Thanks for subscribing to Pushkin Plus and for humoring this tangent. You can hear more bonus content from other Pushkin shows like Well-Read Black Girl, Deep Cover, and Car Show. I'm Malcolm Gladwell.